Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
State Treasurer David McRae is returning record amounts of money to Mississippians, whether it's through the College and Career Savings Program or the hundreds of millions in unclaimed money awaiting your claim. Treasurer David McRae says get your applications and claims in today. Treasury.ms.gov.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by CSpire. Power your home or business with CSpire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/CSpire. CSpire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready. Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. Hello. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Rhino in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Here we are, Rhino, kicking off a brand new week.
Howdy, howdy.
All right, the Supreme Court is set to hear the case regarding the tariffs that the president has imposed since he's been in office. They're going to determine whether or not he is within his authority to do so. And he said the economy could, quote, go to hell with no tariffs. I'm not sure about that, but he certainly is one who is a big believer in the power of tariffs. I heard a report this morning about how much the tariffs will cost holiday shoppers. I think I got this right. I heard this right. $140 billion? Is that right? That sounds about right. Now, honestly, that's not a lot relative to the size of the economy. And that, I think what it tells you, $40 billion. Yeah,
40 not 100. Is what CNBC's reporting.
40. Yeah, and there are numerous other news outlets as well. 40.
Comes out to $132 per shopper.
That's right. And I think that's largely because if you look at what we import relative to our GDP, it's actually not that much. It just is a total percentage. It's a small, it's about $3 trillion bucks in an economy that it's 10% that has a $30 trillion GDP. I think that's why. So some folks, of course, that little bit of money is a problem for them, and others it's not. But I think that's largely why. But the president is concerned about the ruling that the Supreme Court may hand down on this, and we'll certainly see how that goes. Here in Mississippi, we got big-time election coming up. I say big time. We got some special elections scheduled for tomorrow. Please get out and vote if these elections are in your district. There are House seats and there are Senate seats that are up for tomorrow. Just see if I can run them down real quick. Rhino, check me on this. Mississippi House District 22, Chickasaw, Clay, and Monroe counties. I just give a list of the rather than going through the specific races, just the districts that are being contested. Mississippi House District 26, Bolivar, Cahoma, and Sunflower counties. You see that one, don't you? What else we got? There's Senate races as well that are coming up that we need to be aware of. Those are the only two House districts.
Yeah, then you got Senate District 1, which covers parts of DeSoto and Tate counties. Senate District 2, which is also DeSoto and Tate counties. Senate District 11, which is Coahoma, DeSoto, Quitman, Tate, and Tunica counties. Senate District 19, which is solely in DeSoto. Senate District 24, which is LaFleur, Panola, and Tallahatchie counties. That's got a bunch of people in it.
Yep.
Senate District 26, which includes Hines and Madison counties, also has a pretty big group of folks. Senate District 44, which is Forrest, Lamar, and Perry counties. Senate District 45, which is Forrest and Lamar counties.
Right. So, two House and what's that, 7-8 Senate districts, I believe?
Yeah, 8.
Okay. So, be aware. Now, DeSoto County, you know, one of those that was all chopped up after the redistricting. So, how many affect DeSoto County? 3, is that right?
At least 2, I know. The Senate districts, you got 4 that will impact DeSoto County.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yes.
4 of the 8 are affected by that one county or include that one county. Okay. And then, of course, the one more local to where we are, in fact, where we're currently positioned, Senate District 26, it's got 7 candidates in it, I believe. That, the one vacated by former Senator John Horn, who's now the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. So, and keep in mind, no primaries here. So it's just everybody's in the bucket there. But the big thing is get out and vote. Very important. For the representation in the House, in the Senate, pardon me, I was scrolling, looking at something. So 2 over on the House side, 8 on the Senate side. And the Senate races pretty much span the state, at least down through the Hattiesburg area, right? From the northern part of the state through central Mississippi down to the Hattiesburg area. Get out and vote, folks. Appreciate that. And then on the national scene, everybody's going to be paying attention to the big mayor's race in the Big Apple, New York City. It looks like at this point, Zoran Mondami, the Marxist communist socialist. I think calling him a socialist is being too kind. He appears poised to capture Gracie Mansion there in the Big Apple. He, of course, is being opposed by Cuomo and Sliva. Cuomo is in the race as an independent. And then Curtis Sliva, the Republican. So you got a Democrat, really a Marxist. You got the former governor of the state, Cuomo, running as an independent. And then you've got Curtis Sliva, the Republican. Right now, it looks like, based on all the polls at least, that Zoran Mondami is going to cruise to victory there. Really very disappointing to see that happen in that major state. Andrew Cuomo, of course, steps out of being the governor. And now, of course, a candidate for mayor. He kind of lacks the it and the wow factor. It's a sad day when you look at him as being preferred over the other candidates. That doesn't bode well for the field, that's for sure. Curtis Sliva seems to be a decent guy. Guardian Angels founder, Republican, but what, he's got 13-14% in the polls. So that's an interesting one. And then 2 big races for governor, New Jersey and Virginia. Mikey Sherrill, the Democrat in New Jersey, and then Jack Chitarelli, the Republican in New Jersey. That one's neck and neck right now in the polls, the edge to the Democrat. And then in Virginia, the old Dominion there, well, you got Winsome Earl Sears, the Republican candidate, former or current, I should say, lieutenant governor. And it looks like that she is trailing in the, what's her name, Spanberger? the Democrat candidate in Virginia, that in that particular race. Yeah, Spanberger leads. This is just about a few hours ago. Still shows is leading in the polls. But that's going to be a big one that everybody's paying attention to. Virginia has interesting laws in that you can serve multiple terms as governor, just not in a row. You got one term, that's it. You got to exit. Governor Glenn Youngkin will leave that post as governor. I think he's been a good governor, and he was swept in because of, as Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders in Arkansas says, because of the crazy stuff that was going on. Just seems like every day there were new reports coming out of the Loudoun County, Virginia, which is a bunch of rich white liberals, and also Arlington, Virginia area. Crazy stuff happening in the schools there. I mean, just completely, totally, forcefully leaned into every nonsensical, crazy gender ideology and DEI and CRT and all that stuff. And Youngkin comes in as a breath of fresh air and says, yeah, we're going to get rid of all that stuff. And honestly, a lot of crossover Democrats voted for him, put him in office as governor. All that stuff's kind of calmed down. Now it looks like they're gravitating back towards Abigail Spanberger, who's the Democratic candidate in that state. But these are important because they will be a bit of a harbinger for the midterms. Coming right back.
This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
We're back with you in the Element Well studio. We've got Cassandra Mobley, the interim CEO, COO of Mississippi Food Network, and Stacy Jordan, Director of Development at the Mississippi Food Network, joining Middays at 11:05. And that's because, of course, you know the SNAP benefits are ceasing to be funded as of November 1st, food stamps as they are commonly known. But as Rhino and I pointed out on Friday, this fear-mongering that this affects everyone enrolled in the program on that day. You got no chance of getting any SNAP benefits for the month of November. You just missed it. That's categorically false. That's because it's a big program. 42 million people enrolled in it, and it makes sense to distribute more evenly the allocation of those benefits. They are electronic. Works just like Social Security. Everybody doesn't get their Social Security payment on the same day. Those are assigned to different waves, different cycles. Also very common in billing cycle. You've seen that on your utility bills. Anytime you got large volume like that, just spreading it out just makes it a little easier to administer. In the case of food stamps, as we pointed out Friday, Rhino, the big deal is if everybody got their payments on the same day, there'd be a run on the grocery stores. And that'd be a problem for the grocery industry. So I don't know how many cycles there are. My guess is, Rhino, benefits are maybe issued every day. 42 million isn't quite the size of Social Security, where I know Social Security checks payments not checks anymore. For the most part, they're electronic. They're distributed daily. That's because there's a bunch of people that receive Social Security benefits. Whereas SNAP, not as big a universe of recipients. And so I don't know that it's necessarily every day. But it's not all. The big point is, didn't all happen on November 1st. So it's not like we missed this opportunity, this window. And you got to wait till December. That's kind of the narrative I submit the Democrats are promoting in particular as they attempt to blame Republicans for the shutdown. And I heard the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, this morning, as he should, as the Speaker of the House, addressing the nation on the status of the shutdown and what he thinks will happen. And, of course, imploring the Democrats to get on board with the Republicans. Seven, I think, are needed to end the shutdown, pass the continuing resolution, and get this thing going. At the heart of the complaint, of course, is the enhanced subsidies in the Obamacare exchanges. That's what the big contention is generally all about. At least that's what Democrats say. I think it's beyond that, but this is enough to get folks' attention. Now, I've thought for some time that the Democrats were going to hold out and not support approving the CR and getting the government reopened until such time that folks started to receive notifications that the premiums are going up sharply. That is in process, has happened for the most part. November 1st open enrollment period in the ACA Obamacare marketplaces. 24 million signed up for subsidized coverage in those programs. I thought for some time they were going to wait, of course, to leverage it from a political perspective. Hey, look, the mean old Republicans don't want to continue the enhanced subsidies, and they're the reason your premiums have gone up. I thought that they had a marketing blitz staged to promote that message. And yesterday, it turns out Politico published an article. Actually, it was a couple of days ago. And the title of the article, Democrats Plot Messaging Blitz Ahead of Obamacare Hike. So we'll see if that takes place. But it's kind of gets disgusting after a while that we focus more on politics and personal political fortunes and hides than we do policy and what is in the best interest of the people. It's more about what's in the best interest of those elected to office, and they tend to govern that way. But that's what's going on right now, as the Democrats are going to try to make a big deal out of this. My personal belief, and if I'm wrong, I'll certainly admit it in a couple of days, is that they're waiting till after the elections tomorrow. I think they smell blood in the water and believe they can take the big gubernatorial elections in New Jersey and in Virginia, and I think that would embolden them somewhat. And I think maybe they'll say, okay, we're going to open the government up, but it's pretty clear people want Democrat policies or some garbage like that, and they're going to leverage that. And keep in mind, this CR that's on the table, every day that goes by, it's only good for, as of today, 18 days. Think about that. The CR that would pass would open up the government for a shorter period of time than it's been shut down. That's insane. That's how we run things. It expires November 21st. Now, could they amend it? Sure. But right now, what's sitting in the U.S. Senate that needs support from Democrats to immediately reopen the government just extends the funding through November 21st. And it would have to, of course, go back to the House or into conference if they wanted to extend the date out further. Certainly possible. procedurally to do that. And then today we're waiting on what the Trump administration, their response to a couple of federal judges that said, yeah, you got to find the money and pay these SNAP benefits. You got to get that going immediately. And so the Trump administration is responsible for some sort of response and plan there that they've at least got to tell them right today, Rhino. My understanding procedurally today, the sequence, yeah, okay, we're going to do that. And I think by Wednesday, they've got to supply some details around that plan. Now, I've always felt that anywhere there's big government money, there's big waste, fraud, and abuse. And because of our inefficient systems, sometimes it's bad policy. Sometimes it's inefficient systems. And by systems, I mean literally the information technology systems that are used to administer all these various programs are not good. They're just old, and they need modernization. But as Rhino likes to point out all the time, the people in charge of administration don't want any problems. Just make it easy. They're just faceless bureaucrats just looking at the clock, waiting to cash in on their retirement one day. Have it fairly easy. But this report surfaced yesterday in the Wall Street Journal about how the city of Chicago was able to literally leverage the Obamacare exchanges to address its budgetary woes. Hear this out. So they subsidize health insurance, does the city of Chicago, for their retirees. Many of them are too young because they're able to retire before they're eligible for Medicare. And so they had this commitment to provide them health insurance, which was a bad policy to start with. And so that was spiking the cost of that, going through the roof. And that was putting enormous pressure on the city's budget. So they dumped the retirees, listen to this, on the Obamacare exchanges, where the federal government is picking up that cost. And they're picking up the retirees' cost, and the federal government's picking up the rest, and they saved several hundred million dollars. Unbelievable. They have a $2.1 billion unfunded retiree health care. So that's what happens when you just implement these gold-plated pension and health care policies in public sector employment. And now you've got, it just came up on the screen, literally, while I'm talking about it on the news channel, the Obamacare Blue City bailout. We're going to take a break right now. We're coming right back.
From the...
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
I went down to the demonstration to get my fair share of abuse, singing words gonna bend. If we don't, we're gonna blow a 50-amp fuse. Sing it to me.
You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want.
But if you try sometimes, will you just fight fine?
What a great tune there by the Stones, Mick Jagger. wasn't that one of the songs that the president used in his first round? Yeah, I remember that. Can't always get what you want. So this will blow your mind, talking about the SNAP benefits. And a lot of people are saying, why do we have 42 million people on SNAP? And I think there are some people who perhaps, let's say they legitimately are in need. Whether or not the government and SNAP, the program per se, is the way to address their needs. I'm talking about the blind, the disabled, those who find it more difficult to work, although that's improving. We're finding ways that those people even as well, right, can contribute, earn a living. They're caretakers, taking care of a sick parent, for example, an elderly person. Absolutely. There's some legitimate safety net, truly needy cases. Again, that's not to say that I think the federal government's SNAP program is the best way to ensure that they have food to eat. And as you pointed out the other day, the very first letter of the title of the program, it tells you something about what you need to know, which is it's designed to be supplemental, not a full, complete way of ensuring that you got food to eat. Supplemental. That's the way the program's designed. But listen to this. There are 3.2 million households in Los Angeles County. Nearly a million are on electronic benefits on SNAP. USDA and county data show 31% of LA County is on food stamps. 31%. That's one in every three houses. That's mind-blowing to me. It's just hard for me to believe that a third of the county has a household income, which is what's required, of less than 130% of the federal poverty level. A third? I'm not buying it. I feel like there's a breakdown in the system somewhere. And maybe there's an abundance of that ain't my problem people that allowed this to happen. It's just shocking to me that the numbers are that high. What did we figure out in Mississippi that are on the program? It's 350,000, something like that.
385,000.
That's right. It's 330 or 40,000, I think, that are enrolled in the ACA exchanges. That's right. We looked it up the other day. The numbers are fairly close there. Well, think about that. In the poorest state in the country, our percentage of our population enrolled in SNAP, lower almost by two-thirds of what it is in L.A.? Something don't seem right. Call me skeptical. Okay, so we got some sound to play for you. This is starting to, based on the algorithms of stuff I'm reading, popping up in my feed. And it's just more class warfare rhetoric. And, of course, this whole issue of the government being shut down and the Obamacare enhanced subsidies, of course, and as well as the SNAP benefits. Lots of class warfare rhetoric. Take a listen here.
I just feel like now is a great time to remind everybody that the average Wisconsinite that makes $68,000 a year pays about $50 out of their taxes to cover the SNAP program. That's your contribution. You also pay about $1,000 that covers corporate subsidies that benefits the wealthy and major corporations. So if you're upset about having to contribute to SNAP, you're mad at the wrong people. And as we are busy arguing about that, guess what the wealthy are doing? They are laughing all the way to the bank. So hope that helps.
So there's some people that simply don't understand basic process, logic, economics. Oh, God forbid, economics, that's like way out there, right, as far as their ability to comprehend. So if you didn't catch it, folks, she's talking about people that live in Wisconsin, Wisconsinite. This idea that there are people who aren't billionaires who are paying for their pay, their assets, their wealth, that's just insane. And that suggests to me that there's an attitude in this country that all wealth originates with government. And what you get to keep is a function of the generosity, the charity, the altruism of government. Rather than, you know, we take a lot of money from those billionaires and it's being distributed and filtered out through all these programs, and it's just not enough. And we could go squeeze them for more, sure, but then there would be all sorts of negative consequences that people like that don't understand. But she's literally making the case that people who aren't receiving their SNAP benefits are paying for the income generated by the wealthy by serving society in not receiving their SNAP benefits. Is that just upside down or what? Like, who the hell do you think pays for the SNAP benefits? It's crazy that they put those on the same plane to me and try to equate those and contrast those. And they're just, I'm running across all sorts of videos being produced by these people that completely buy into this narrative that somehow, some way, they are entitled to the work product and the assets of others. And they just have this deep disdain and contempt for the people who have achieved that massive amount of wealth. And once again, I got to point out, this lady that produced this video, all the various tools that she used to produce that video are enriching the very people she's mad at. Doesn't understand that simple concept that, if you're mad about them getting rich, quit using all the stuff they make. Evidently, it's pretty valuable. Hence, they achieve wealth because markets reward value. But government doesn't like that simple economic principle. They want you to think, oh, no, you got to have us. Got to have government. Government's the only way you can make it, the only way you can exist. This is crazy. And by the way, anytime you see somebody say this, well, it's your tax money paying for that, and the taxpayer's on the hook for this, that, and the other, keep this in mind. You've only paid for about half of what's going out the door. The other half is sitting in the debt pile the government's accumulated because right now we only have enough money coming into the Treasury to fund about half of what goes out. The rest of it gets borrowed. That's just a bad situation to be in, and I hope that gets addressed. But I don't know. I guess it's the algorithms that have just found that I have an interest in that topic, and I'm getting coming across more and more of these class warfare people. I came across one that's a millionaire in New York that's asking to be taxed more. He's walking around the city and he's pointing out all the things that he enjoys about New York and letting the world know he's not going to leave, even though Mondami's going to come in and raise his taxes, that he's willing to pay more for all that. And Mondami, of course, is making all these promises that he cannot keep. He does not run the bus system, thus he can't make buses free. Almost everything that he's proposed that's attracted all these voters to him, he can't do as the mayor.
And somehow it's never crossed the mind of that millionaire to just do it himself?
Right, exactly. Why do you have to filter it through government? It's totally 100% right. Why do you want to send it to the most inefficient, most incompetent manager of money on the planet? That's the U.S. federal government. Why the heck do you send it there? I think, honestly, with the Obamacare subsidies expiring, and I think the SNAP benefit situation we're in right now, should it cause us to pause and think about, hey, is there a better way of helping the truly needy in our society? Does it have to be a program that stood up and operated by bureaucrats in Washington? I mean, is that the way we got to send the money up there? Then they send the money to the states, who sends the money out. Does it have to be that way? Surely there's a better system and process. I think most people believe that, yeah, those who are truly needy, it's incumbent upon us, certainly as Christians we believe that, to help them out. We're coming right back.
Hey, this is Bob.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays. Little check of your money. The Dow down 196 points today. The NASDAQ, however, off its highs of about 250, but it's now down to about 109. Crude oil back above the $60 a barrel level at 61 and change. And then the other thing that's bothersome is the 10-year treasury is moved up. And that, of course, after Jerome Powell and the Fed reduced rates last week by a quarter point. 10-year yield up 4.119 today. And why is that important? Because that's what dictates mortgage rates and any other sort of financing, longer-term financing, automobiles, et cetera. Can affect credit card interest rates as well. So that's going in the wrong direction. Expecting are the markets another rate cut by the end of the year. But we may see even more cuts after that because of a significant number of layoffs just announced. And so remember, the Fed has two mandates is what they call them. Price stability, which is a fancy way of saying keep inflation down, and then maximum employment. And they watch both because by law that's what they're supposed to do is implement monetary policy that primarily comes in the form of interest rate management adjustments to achieve those two mandated objectives of price stability and maximum employment. But you got a number of layoffs that I guarantee you Jerome Powell's taking a look at right now. UPS, Amazon, Intel, Nestle, Accenture, Ford, Novo Nordisk, Microsoft, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Salesforce, Paramount, Target, Kroger, Applied Materials, Meta have all announced significant layoffs. Top of that list, UPS, 48,000 employees last week. Amazon, 30,000. Intel, 24,000. Nestle, 16. This will have a ripple effect across the economy, and the Fed may be taking a look at that. I know they are, and that may influence their action in coming meetings with respect to interest rates. I wouldn't be surprised to see more layoffs. And also, I wouldn't be surprised to see interest rates be about half of where they are right now. Let's say by June of next year. That's kind of my prediction on that. On the CSPIRE text line, Mississippi SNAP disbursement goes out on the 4th and the 21st based on the last two digits of your SSN. I have no idea whether or not that's true. Sounds reasonable to me.
I don't think it's just 2 days. I think it starts on the 4th and is finished by the 21st.
I'd be shocked if it's only two, because that really doesn't accomplish the goal of trying to keep the rush away from the grocery stores. When you got 2 days, it probably ought to be more like 10, 12 in that period.
Yeah, according to the state website, it's based on the last two digits of your case number.
Ah, makes sense.
And that starts with the last two digits, 00 through 04, which goes out on the 4th, and then 05 to 10 on the 5th, 11 to 16 on the 6th, and so forth until you get to 95 and 99 on the 21st.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Thank you for that. CC in Sanatobia says Jerome Powell. Yeah, there you go. The Fed chairman says the AI hiring apocalypse is real. Job creation is pretty close to zero. I do think that job creation is pretty close to zero. I don't think it's all being driven by AI. I think that's clearly a factor. But it's not all being driven. And a lot of these jobs are white-collar jobs. There's no secret about that. And he's heard me say before that a whole new series of jobs will be created that haven't even been invented yet. I totally believe that. I've referred to them as not even a twinkle in the eye yet because they haven't been imagined yet. And he says, well, I guess we'll hope these jobs that aren't even a twinkle in the eye start twinkling soon. I guess the question is, though, CeCe, so should we tell companies, don't try to get more efficient. Don't try to cut costs. Can't do that. You got to keep all these people around, even though you don't need them. So, you know, we've watched this through the years, have we not, Rhino? When people brought computers in. Don't bring those computers in. What am I going to do? As an example. There are numerous, numerous other examples where humans innovate, create new technology that does things more efficient. You know one of the biggest pushbacks many decades ago? The tractor. Don't bring those tractors to the farm. We need all these people to do that work. What are they going to do? You're bringing tractors in. Same deal. And that's just part of the way the economy evolves when it's being driven by human innovation, as it has been since the beginning of humanity. All right, it's time for Fox News and Super Talk News. Cassandra Mobley and Stacey Jordan with the Mississippi Food Network are next.
Of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
Welcome to the show that challenges you to think deeply, and look beyond political posturing. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Well Studio. Hour two of the program. It is Monday. That means we have a short show today. Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors, will come your way at 12:05 today. Cassandra Mobley, interim CEO, COO of the Mississippi Food Network, is our guest. Cassandra, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so tell us how this government shutdown is affecting your organization. We've been talking this morning a bit about this suspension, at least at this point, of SNAP food stamps. Those benefits scheduled to go out starting November 1. Completed the month of October, but no money to continue through November. So those EBT cards for SNAP aren't going out. How are you guys helping out?
Right. Well, what we're doing is we are stepping up with the community, of course. You know, nobody here in Mississippi does anything alone. So since we serve 56 counties in the state, we have over 400 partner agencies, which 75% of those are churches and nonprofit organizations. And we are just coming together with our network to make sure that there's some food supplies available for some of the folks that were expecting to be able to get that, you know, additional help. This is going to be supplemental. You know, we can't replace what SNAP benefits, you know, do for folks. But we're going to stand in that gap as best we can with our community partners and be there for the people that need it. You know, it's not only the SNAP recipients that are suffering right now. We've got workers that are furloughed and not getting paychecks. I think we're into the second week of some of the TSA people not getting a paycheck. So we're hoping to be a resource. We're certainly planning to do that. It's not a great time of the year with Thanksgiving coming up. We are currently using some of the things that we've been ordering and getting in preparation for Thanksgiving, because, you know, that's a time of year where we do more for families to have food on their Thanksgiving table. So we're utilizing some of those supplies right now for families that were looking to get SNAP benefits this week that are not going to get them.
Gotcha. Well, so if people are interested and they need your help, your organization's services, how do they do that?
Yeah, they can go to our website. It's msfoodnet.org. And when you get our website up, the first thing you're going to see is if you need help. So we want to make sure that the people being affected by this know where to go for help. So they click on that, put their zip code in, and it tells them where the local agencies are in their area they can get help from. But other than that, there's a donate button. And if you want to donate to the Food Network to help everybody, you know, as we move through this, we're certainly ordering more food. We're using our volume buying power to get food in, you know, by the truckload and get it turned around quickly. I will say that this morning we had an Instacart delivery to the food bank by some individuals. And so we had several several chunks of food delivered this morning, groceries, through an Instacart delivery. So any way that you can help is going to be helpful. You can also volunteer. We pack 12,000 boxes a month for seniors. We're always needing help for that. We provide over 2,000 backpack meal kits to children every week through our backpack program, and we pack those too. So we can always use people's help volunteering. We're going to be packing more food drive food this week in preparation for responding to this crisis.
Gotcha. So your organization is different than SNAP in that you don't provide some sort of benefits that could be spent in a grocery store. You're actually providing food itself.
We provide food, yes. Yeah. And we do that through our 400-plus partner network.
Okay.
So they're all over our 56 counties. Like I said, they're mostly churches and then nonprofit organizations. And they work really hard. They know the people in their community that need it.
Sure.
And they know the people right now that need it. You know, this is affecting a lot of seniors that live on fixed incomes that depend on these groceries. They may not get much a month, but they still depend on what they get.
Is this something, Cassandra, we've been talking about this on the program today, that could ultimately, with the right structure, organization, funding, systems, replace the SNAP program? Is this something you guys could take over or other similar organizations so that we could get government out of it?
The charitable food system, the way it's set up now, cannot replace SNAP. Just because of the amount of money that's involved, we just don't have that kind of funding. We definitely have a big part in that, and I think that there is room to do more on our end to be able to provide more, but I don't see how the way we're currently structured that we could replace SNAP.
I got you. Yeah. I'm just wondering, though, again, if rather than sending our money to Washington, we sent it to you guys on an equivalent amount, if you wouldn't be more efficient at handling this problem than in taking care of our truly needy to make sure they got food.
Well, we would certainly welcome the influx of funds for sure. And, yes, we are very efficient, very effective with what we do. And, you know, the fact that we work with boots-on-the-ground organizations, they know who the people are in need, and they're serving the people that really need it. Yeah, I mean, we can do a lot with a little bit, that's for sure.
And this is available throughout the state, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we function like this all year round. You know, this isn't something new for us. It's just what we do.
Sure.
But stepping into this gap, during this time, you know, the thing about this is it's so uncertain. Nobody really knowing how long it's supposed to last. And realizing really last week that this was something that was about to truly happen, because it's not ever happened before.
Yeah.
Well, what can we activate? What can we do to do this? And to be honest with you, our community is really stepping up. Our partners are stepping in going, hey, what can we do? How can we help? If you are in a community that you know you have someone there, a church or something that's doing for people, you know, help them out.
Yeah.
You know, get them some food, get them some funds. They can do big things too. But that's what we do, is we have such a good buying power. We're able to get food in, lots of food in, and get it out. We're pretty efficient with doing that, considering we're a small organization doing big things, for sure.
So how do you guys handle fresh produce and just in terms of preserving and retaining that, or any other sort of food items that require refrigeration or special handling?
Yeah,
how do you deal with that?
We have a large warehouse downtown, obviously. We have drive-in coolers and freezers,
okay.
You know, about 5,000 square feet of that, 68,000 square feet of warehouse.
Okay.
And then all of our trucks are refrigerated trucks. So we have been building the capacity of our partners as well over many years of refrigerators and freezers and coolers and things like that. We just recently supplied some of our partners with, through a grant, some refrigerated vehicles so they can handle things like milk and things like that even better.
Yeah, I got you. Wow, that's fascinating. So how long has the organization been around?
Since 1984. So last year was our 40th anniversary. So 41 years this year, you know, and it was founded a long time ago by a group of people that were really wanting to help the community. I can't imagine that at that time, because I think they distributed about 100,000 pounds that first year, to think that in 2024 we distributed 27.2 million pounds
Amazing.
Of food. They probably would have thought that was enough food to feed the whole world, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not.
You talked a little bit about some of the folks that you're seeing that are coming to you for some help. Have you seen a significant uptick as a result of this SNAP benefit stuff?
Yes, we have. Last week, I think people just, it scared them. You know, what am I going to do? I'll tell you one particular instance. We had a lady that was in our parking lot last week, and she had been driving around trying to find us. She's a grandmother who recently got custody of her four grandchildren, and she had signed up for SNAP benefits and qualified for it and was expecting to get benefits this week and found out last week that she's not going to get them. And so she was basically in a panic. What am I going to do? Yeah. You know, she's trying to support four grandkids on a senior's fixed income, which is probably just Social Security.
Yeah.
So those are the kinds of people that this is really having a negative effect on, the people that have the most difficulty rebounding from something like this.
Yeah, I see that. Well, really don't know where that's going at this point. So, and just to your discussion a minute ago, sharing that story about Instacart delivering stuff, that's somebody that's paying for that, right? I assume anonymously and just having it delivered to the Mississippi Food Network.
They did.
What a great idea that
is. It was great. All we had were first names on the bags of groceries that came in. I mean, it's fantastic that the community is stepping up, and they really are, because we can't do this without our community. And, of course, Mississippi, you know, we get a bad rap for a lot of things, and there's a lot of poverty in the state. We know that there's a lot of food insecurity in our state. But to see the generosity, Mississippi is like one of the most generous states in the nation, and people are stepping up right now.
This is the time we need it for sure.
That's right. That's right.
All right. So, once again, if folks wanted to contribute, how do they do that?
They go to our website. It's msfoodnet.org, or they can call at 601-353-7286.
Cassandra Mobley with the Mississippi Food Network. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks for telling
that
story.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Folks, we're stepping aside for a break. Coming right back. Stay with us.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Well Studio. We appreciate Cassandra Mobley from the Mississippi Food Network coming in the studio. So, you know, it's a question that comes up a lot. Rhino, is this the best way of providing these safety net services such as food, SNAP? Is the best way to accomplish that? Through the federal government and the federal bureaucracy and all that that encompasses and entails, I think not. The question is that a function that could be pushed down to the private sector, private charities? You know, that comes up a lot. A lot of people say, well, that's the domain of churches, the parlance of churches. And let them handle it. And I'd love to see that happen, but I've always thought that that's a problem financially. And that's what you heard Cassandra say. Now, that doesn't mean that we couldn't get more money to them to undertake that function. So that would take a lot of money, though. So the problem is, if we said, okay, let's get rid of the SNAP program at the federal level, and again, just deem that that is the province of the states, let them take care of it, how would that work from a budgetary financial perspective? Would we cut federal taxes because we don't have to fund this program anymore? Well, that's a problem because even if we got rid of it, we're still in a deficit. And that's just how contorted and broken our federal budget is. That even if we got rid of that program, got rid of Medicaid, got rid of all the rest of it, we still can't balance the budget. I mean totally get rid of it. I don't mean get just eliminate the waste, fraud, and abuse. I mean end the programs. So it's just something that I think we should think about. Yeah, all these layoffs have gotten some folks sending us text on the ceasefire text line, and that's just a long list of companies I just shared that have announced layoffs. By the way, the primary reason UPS laid off 48,000 people is because they ended their contract with Amazon. They were providing shipping services for Amazon, and they could not get the margins they needed to make that a viable business line of business for them. And so they have significantly, if not almost totally, ended their business with Amazon, its largest customer. You talk about something that's hard to do. I used to go to various seminars and training sessions designed for executive level in a small business like mine. And they would always teach you to divide your customers into three columns, the A, the B, and the C column. And often it would be recommended that you terminate your relationship with the C customers. That's probably costing you to do business with them. And it's just hard to say, okay, yeah, we don't want you to spend any money with us anymore. But that's exactly what UPS did here. They basically said, hey, Amazon, you're our largest customer. You're gone. Think about that, how hard that is to do. And the market hears that, and the next thing you know, 48,000 people lose their job. But so they're no longer doing business at that level anymore with their largest customer. Now, also remember, they staffed up a lot because of COVID, because we were all ordering stuff being shipped to us. Remember that, because governments at all levels said, you can't go shop in those stores. It kind of limited us to only the big box guys, plus buy it online. And we saw a tremendous surge. Also remember the dumb guidance, Lysol your Amazon cardboard boxes. All that crap. Oh, my gosh. There were videos of people showing you how to sanitize your shipments. Were we off our rocker or what? These were a lot of people that just looking to be relevant and for attention, as you like to say, more than anything. Make a 10-minute video on how to sanitize your doorknobs. Oh, man. Well, so that's what's going on at Amazon. PricewaterhouseCoopers, one of the big four accounting firms, says that their business is down due to a pullback in economic conditions. So the thing that's driving our economy right now is one industry, and that's artificial intelligence, and it's the CapEx being the massive amount of money being spent on IT infrastructure as all these guys are in a race to build out their AI capabilities. And, of course, that requires data centers because that's where all of that sophisticated software and information is housed and processed. CC in Sanatobia is caught on to my comment a minute ago, which is absolutely true that there was, if you go read history, a big pushback on the tractor. Now, CC says we're not talking about a tractor that will replace a few farmhands. We're talking about a system that is eliminating thousands and thousands of jobs in one fell swoop, and it's only going to get worse with no new jobs to jump to. And when these new jobs are created, who's to say artificial intelligence won't cover those jobs too? So the first thing I would say, CC, is I would invite you, and I'm not trying to be condescending here whatsoever, but fact is, in the 1900s, I remember studying this rhino in econ class in the 70s. In the 1900s, about a third of our workforce worked in the agriculture industry. And, of course, our population in 1930, as I recall, was about 130 million. And we had about 35 million of workers in the ag business. And we struggled to feed our own population. Now, less than 3% of our population of 340 million is in the agriculture industry. And our farmers are so dang good, they ain't got nobody to sell what they produce to. It's a big problem we have. Because that drives down, obviously, the price of what they produce. So it's not fair to say, CC, that when the tractor came in, it was a few farm ads. No, it was literally millions of jobs. Was it over a more protracted period of time? Well, sure, because cycle times of everything in our digital economy have been shrunk dramatically. But I guess I would just put this question. Thomas, I'm not even going to answer your offshore crap anymore because you're wrong about that. I'm telling you, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. We're not offshoring auditors and tax preparers. That's ridiculous. We're certainly not offshoring people who are driving UPS trucks. That's not physically possible. We're not offshoring people working in the Target stores. So you're wrong about that. But more importantly, lots of companies have figured out that in their offshoring efforts, which really picked up in the 80s, 90s, that hasn't worked out too well for them in many cases, and they're pulling that back. Do I think we need to have return to the H-1B visa program as it was originally designed? 100% absolutely. Do I think there's been some abuse of that? 100% absolutely. And we should rein that in. In fact, the Vice President, J.D. Vance, said that last week about the H-1B visa program. And that has been abused. It's gone. Originally, it was actually because we had so many foreigners coming into our colleges and universities here. They were trying to get them to stay because they were super intelligent people or the field of those people that excelled. Companies were trying to figure a way, and the country was trying to figure a way. Man, rather than going back to their home country and competing with us, it'd be better for them to stay here. That was the original premise of the H-1B visa program. It has been, as so many big programs are, government programs, it's been hijacked. It's been compromised. It's gone beyond what it was originally intended to do. But I guess I put this question out there, CC, for you and everybody else. What should we do? Just say, hey, guys, end all artificial intelligence development. Don't do that anymore. Because if we do that, I 100% believe we will ultimately be living under the sickle and crescent flag of the CCP. That's what I believe, because they will surpass us and they will take that high ground. Stay with us.
Sing a little bit of these working man blues. This song for the working man.
From the Seabrook, middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It is middays from the Element Well studio. So, let's see here. Jason in Tupelo says, yeah, UPS is laying off people, but at the United States Postal Service, we can't find anyone wanting to work. Yeah, I know. There's just different situations depending on the nature of the work, the employer, the region, the state, all the above. Deborah and Karth, maybe y'all already covered this and I missed it, but where are the taxes normally used for government employees' salaries and for SNAP going at this time? Well, we're all still paying taxes, and they're going into the Treasury's accounts, Deborah. They're just not being put out, distributed by the Treasury through all these various programs. So it starts by you send your money to the Treasury, the IRS, which is operated by the Treasury, and that is deposited in their various accounts. But the Treasury, and it works the same way at the state level, by the way. The Treasury then allocates and distributes those funds through what are called warrants. And the warrants match up and are checked out against appropriations by the Congress. And the state of Mississippi would be what was appropriated by the legislature. So agencies receive an appropriation, and as they draw money from the state treasury or federal treasury, works the same way. They present what are called warrants for those monies to the treasurer, who then transfers it their way, and they use it. So right now it's just being held up. But remember that the plan would be, of course, to go back and catch everybody up, all agencies, all the employees, et cetera, for the period of time that the government was shut down, where those monies aren't going their way. They're just being held back, essentially. Good question, though. Bill on the C Spire text line says, this election shows you can't fix stupid, but you can confuse it a little while. That's interesting as well. Let's see. Marion Greenwood said, from what I saw Saturday at Walmart, doesn't look like anything's been cut. Barely found a parking place. Wow, interesting. Well, maybe it was whatever was left, I guess, from October, and they're making a run on it, I'm thinking. Worried about that. Mo says, I was wondering why all my Amazon packages were coming via USPS recently. Yeah, that's a good point there, Mo. That's because UPS has cut their contract, or significantly reduced it, is what management's official statement on the matter is. And so that's why they let a bunch of people go. Now, perhaps you're right in that the post office needs more money needs more people to take up the slack. But then you're back to, well, is the post office, because that's been a complaint, you know, for a long time. The post office does handle a lot of that last mile delivery for Amazon, and the way law is written, they have to do that, and it's at an extremely depressed rate, and that is a drain financially on the post office. But the post office, not a private company like UPS that has to be accountable to stockholders and investors. So that's what's going on there. It's a little different situation. Yeah, he also said, did Mose, I saw where you were going there, Gerard, when I asked, I think Cassandra, based on the time, I did ask her, hey, is this something you guys think could be used to replace the current government-sponsored SNAP program? He says, I see where you're going, did Mose, but since the Food Network uses churches, that old argument of church and state would come up. I agree with you. They would be much more efficient, but the lawsuits would be never-ending. I'm not following you, Mose. I'm saying if we just eliminated the federal SNAP program, there wasn't any government program, and this was just all done.
But then if you started sending tax dollars to private entities that work with churches, you would have some people on the left immediately draw up lawsuits.
100%. And that's not what I was suggesting, by the way. I apologize if that was the inference. What I'm suggesting is if you cut my taxes that I send to the federal government, I would, on my own accord as a private person, just send the equivalent amount of money. I'm assuming, I'm theorizing here, so that I would send that to organizations such as the Food Network, because I would have that money that otherwise I sent to the federal government to watch it be distributed and utilized in a grossly inefficient manner. So, yeah, I apologize for that, Mose. I didn't mean to give that impression. I wasn't suggesting to privatize the SNAP program through churches whatsoever. I was just saying cut my taxes, and I've suggested the same thing about health care. Give me some sort of little tax break, if you will, if I were to fund the health care for the truly needy as opposed to the only option they have, which is now in Medicaid or ACA exchanges, a premium tax credit in the exchange. By the way, I just realized when I went to break that I said the sickle and crescent. What I meant to say was the hammer and sickle, that, of course, the graphics that are emblazoned upon the Chinese Communist Party flag. There's another flag I was thinking about that got me conflated that does have a crescent on it. It has to do with my college fraternity, and that's where I got a little misguided in the brain there. But, yeah, so I believe to CC's point, he made the comment, I'm just simply trying to get you to see it's not the big, glorious thing you think it is. Actually, I think it's way bigger than what I think it is, CC. So just the opposite is my opinion. I think we're in the embryonic stage. I think this is going to be transformational, and I think there's going to be an enormous amount of wealth created. Do I think there will be some stumbling blocks? Of course. Always are with novel technology, always are with renaissance-level transformational technology. Absolutely, 100%. But just keeping up with how companies are utilizing this technology to achieve massive amount of productivity and efficiency, we're just getting started. Absolutely just getting started. So I would ask the question, what do you want? Again, you just want to say, hey, look, let's outlaw artificial intelligence. Let's just say it's that we don't want anybody using it. No development of the technology, no utilization of the technology is completely outlawed. And in the meantime, China goes full speed ahead. Maximum power. Maximum focus on artificial intelligence and quantum computing. Like I said, I truly believe if we were to make that pivot decision that within the not-so-distant future, we would all be saluting the hammer and sickle flag. We'd be buying what we need for our very survival from them, and they would be telling us what to do. This literally is a race. Literally is a race. And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, CC. He says that, not whatsoever. So he says, that's my whole point. You have googly eyes for this thing. It's not googly eyes. It's just an understanding of the power of human innovation. We've all watched it for decades, and we're seeing it again, and it's manifesting itself in this novel technology, which, by the way, has been in development for a few decades as well. We're just getting to the point where we've perfected the computing power and the storage and the connectivity and all the building blocks to where it can be implemented for practical use. So, like I've said, I believe with Jensen Huang, it's not so much that AI replaces your job as much as it is people using AI replace your job. So would you be in favor, CC, of AI replacing government jobs? Serious question. Curious. I am. In fact, I think we should implement a policy where no new jobs are created and no new hires are made for vacated jobs unless the agency, the hiring organization, can prove that AI can't do the job. That's what I believe. You want to save money in the government, that's the way to save money. Only through technology are we going to save money. You want to cut down the cost of health care? That's the way to do it. You're not going to change insurance. The way to drive the price of... Okay, so he says he's not in favor of artificial intelligence replacing anyone's job. How about computers? Are you okay with computers replacing government jobs? Because that's been happening for a long time. Computer systems and technology. Or should we just return to all manual and create a bunch of new government jobs? I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm asking a serious question. I thought our goal here was to try to achieve efficiencies in our government operations so as to save taxpayer money. That's what I'm in favor of. I'm for the use of any technology that allows us to do that. And it's also being used for safety purposes, big time being used to keep us safe. Final segment after this break.
Poly Up of Mississippi.
Are we going to do this?
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Keep rolling. 3, 2, 1.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back. It's Middays from the Element Well Studio. And I get it, CeCe, you're not in favor of it. You say you know it's reality and you're not in favor of it. And so I ask you, well, what's the alternative? Just stop? Seriously, are you in favor? Since you're not in favor of it, do you believe? I think a lot of people, this question crosses their mind. Do you believe we should just render artificial intelligence just illegal? Just completely abandon it. Stop all development. Stop all creation of new technology. If we were to do that today, the economy of this country crashes. Absolutely crashes. 100% crashes. And I'm talking about because the vast majority of the growth in our economy is coming from that. The other industries are effectively not growing, according to official GDP data. But they will, as the more they utilize the technology. And it's being utilized across the landscape. He said, you had a successful business with many employees. Would you have felt comfortable replacing them with artificial intelligence and sending them to the unemployment line? Don't think I would have done that, and here's why. Because if we had been able to implement AI in our company to do some of that work, that would have made, I believe, the company more efficient and increased both its top and bottom line significantly, and would have allowed us to invest in new lines of business where we would have relocated those employees and reassigned those employees. Big public companies, if you've got a UPS that's got 48,000 layoffs, and the vast majority of those are involved in shipping in the transportation of products from Amazon Web Services, not Amazon, Amazon, not Web Services, the e-commerce side of the business, and you're cutting that back because you can't make any money off of it. I mean, should a company keep employees knowing they're losing money in what they're doing? I don't know. I think that's a problem. That's what the left wants. You can't let those people go. You got to keep them even though you're losing money and you can't afford them. Now, ultimately, everybody loses their job is what happens. So I don't know what the answer is for that.
Maybe. I would put a point in there about the conversation about the tractor and replacing farmhands and AI replacing white-collar workers. Which of those two scenarios has the more readily transferable skill set? A farmhand or somebody that works in the accounting wing of a big company?
I'm honestly not sure. I have to think about that. It depends on the era.
But true, because in the farmhand era, there would be more farms to go to. But in this era, if you're talking about an easily, readily transferable skill set, if you work in the corporate administration part of a big company, there's a ton of companies that have middle management positions.
Yeah. So what are you saying? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I'm saying that there are always going to be cycles where certain sectors of that society get recycled or regurgitated or flipped or whatever way you want to put it.
Yeah.
Because of innovations. And we've come to a point now where those that are at risk have a much more varied and readily transferable skill set for today's economy than we ever had in the past.
Right.
Because, I mean, yeah, you go back to when there were more farms, you still had to have, you still had to be a farmhand traveling a further distance, likely to a more distant farm to work. So it would have been a bigger hardship than, oh, well, company A let me go, company B is right next door, and they're hiring.
Yeah, that's a good point. And there are all sorts of other types of jobs the accountant can do other than just the strict bookkeeping aspect of accounting. I learned that when I was at Ole Miss this past weekend. The School of Accountancy had its annual tailgate, and I went always go and talk to some recent grads that are not actually working in public accounting, started that way and then went out into other fields that investment banking's one, due diligence, quality of earnings work. So lots of opportunities, whereas the farmhand probably more limited, honestly, certainly during that era. Not to say they couldn't reskill and learn new things, but I see your point. I'll also point out that the hammer and sickle flag is the flag of the party, of the Communist Party, not the official flag of the country of China, which is the five-star flag. And I found actually different versions of that, but it's still, though, that's the country's flag versus the party's flag. I don't know why the party thinks they have to have a flag, but generally speaking, that was, it is true. That was the old flag of the Soviet Union. The only point I'm making is if we cede the high ground, the bigger point of artificial intelligence and quantum computing to our enemy, we will live under their control and power. That's my concern. Just want to get that in there. Thomas, you're wrong once again. I'll be back tomorrow.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.